Can you hear me okay? Cool. Okay. So if sound doesn't work for the rest of the presentation, this is basically the key of it, right? So I'm not a I'm a compiler engineer. I'm not an ML specialist. So kind of like a, you know, heads up. If I say something wrong about ML, that's why. You can use ML in an industrial compiler, which is LLVM. Actually, show of hands, does anyone, have you heard about LLVM, Clang? Cool, okay, about half. I have a slide about that too. So out of the box, actually, as of Clang 17, it's not very well documented, but because, I mean, it's still a work in progress, but you can actually connect to Clang and train models. So that's an interface just for training. It's a DMEMV kind of an interface. I think that means something to the ML community. Like, it's, if not, tell me. And this is not vaporware in the sense that we actually use it for real, right? So, I mean, you can read what's there. But we've been using it for about almost 4 years now, and we have some experience with it. And most of the talk is actually about trying to get to point three there, which is like what we've learned. The rest of it is set up. okay, so LLVM, for those that did not raise their hand, is a open source project. It's a compiler. Actually, LLVM itself is a library. So it defines an intermediate representation. That's what IR stands for. It contains state-of-the-art optimizations. It also knows how to lower to x86 or ARM or other targets. And then Clang is something like it compiles C or C++ down to LLVM IR. So basically, Clang is built on top of LLVM. And so is Swift. There's a Rust compiler. There's a Fortran compiler as well. And I mean, the LLVM project is bigger than this. Like, there's a full tool chain there, like, you know, a debugger, linker, all of that. Actually, shameless plug for the LLVM community that I'm part of. There's a dev room this afternoon here somewhere. To us, to Google, so I work at Google. To us, C and C++ is very important. Basically, anything that is performance critical, which is basically anything, is written in C or C++. When we say C and C++, I really mean LLVM. And when I talk about LLVM, I mean LLVM at tip of tree in GitHub. So we don't have a special fork or anything like this, and we really chase the head by minus usually two weeks. So we're like very close to the head all the time. We have a release team that keeps it basically in sync. And even small performance improvements matter because, like, you know, like a 1% saving, you know, like, you know, across the fleet really means that much less hardware you have to buy, you know, watts you have to produce or consume, etc., right? And we keep doing this. So, I mean, all the performance improvements that we make are small, but they're like constant, and it's like interest, it compounds, right? Our binaries, no shocker, they serve RPC requests, right? No surprise there. The key thing is that to do that, so to optimize these things, like, there's many things you can do, but I mean, as a compiler engineer, we are primarily occupied with how do we make the RPC request complete quickly, right? And the RPC request traverses a lot of code. Most of it is actually not the code that you want to execute. So there's things like networking stack, serialization, deserialization, security, blah, 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 blah. And all of those things are reusable code, and they try to be generic, which is the exact opposite of what I want for performance. Because for performance, I want it to be as specialized to what I'm actually doing. Like, I don't want it to be generic, right? And for that reason, actually, the biggest levers that we have for performance are we collect profiles that tell us, like, where actually the program is spending time, and then we re-optimize it, so we recompile it with them. And link time optimizations, which are basically like we can look at the whole program and try to, based on that understanding, try to make the right decisions. So things are big, like, you know, lots of data, lots of instructions to execute, nothing fits in any cache. I'm not being ambiguous there, I'm being actually precise. No cache fits the data that we're talking about, either instructions or the actual data being processed. So that's why like optimizations like inlining are, you know, very impactful because they contextualize, so they specialize things down to what you actually really have to execute. And then you end up with large functions, which means that optimizations like register allocation now have like a big problem to solve. What am I doing? Okay, here we go. No. Okay, which kind of gets us to why we want to do ML, right? So we want to do ML because we're looking at problems that are, sequential decision making. So inlining is about, hey, is this call site worth inlining? Sure, okay, fine. Well, the program just changed now, right? So what about this other call site? Is it still worth inlining? Maybe not, right? So as you go along, the state of the problem that you're trying to optimize changes. We don't have an oracle that tells us what's the perfect optimization decision, especially at like the scale that we're talking about. I'm kind of like getting us to say reinforcement learning, probably no surprise to an ML community. Because I mean, otherwise what we do is like we have heuristics that can only operate on like local information. And because I mean, that's the one that actually we can make sense out of, right? So, and we have evidence that they're not good enough in the sense that we know that if we play a bit with them, we can find headroom in optimization. So, but you know, we cannot constantly twizzle with them, right? Like we want something a bit more systematic. So that's why we are interested in ML. We are also scared of ML because the compiler is about everything that ML is not. So the compiler must be correct. I don't think that that's a surprise to anyone, but it's a non-negotiable. The compiler must be deterministic, again, because otherwise it's something that you cannot live with, or you know, it would take forever to compile things because we cannot do incremental builds. So ML, at least like naively to us, felt like something more analog, right? Like it's more like, well, fuzzy, yeah, maybe something, and it's not what we are about, right? So how did we go about it? Well, first, we're not asking ML to deal with correctness. So already in the code that I'm talking about, like in the compiler code that makes decisions like inlining and register allocation, things like this, we kind of already had a separation between what's correct. So, you know, there's certain things that are illegal to do, so then we don't do them. We don't even wonder, are they worth, like, you know, would they be valuable in doing? We just don't do them. What we did here is we stressed that boundary even more. So we created like a very clear interface between ML questions and like or heuristic or policy questions and, you know, correctness issues. So the correctness stuff is, you know, written in normal imperative C++ code that we can all look at and agree that it's actually correct, right? Modulo bugs, as always. But then out of choices that are equally correct, we go and ask ML, you know, which one should we make? To the end user, we don't want to tell them any of this, not because it's like a shame or anything, but because it's the more different the compiler would look like, the more difficult it would be to adopt it. So then how about we make it look the same as it is today, which means no new dependencies, nothing extra, it's just additional flags, right? So that's something that is fine. So which really means that when we give the compiler to the user, we need to embed the models inside and not show any sort of like dependency on some sort of like an inference engine or anything like that. But for training, that's totally different. So for training, we're totally cool with like depending on like TensorFlow and like whatever, and you know, like random generators in the weights and all of that is fine because that's training. And actually we're fine with compiling a different compiler just for training, because that's not something that, you know, like it's not for like everybody, right? So it's just for whoever does the training activity, which we also want to be rare because we don't want to like keep training it as you're trying to ship a product, right? So, you know, like we give you the compiler and then like hopefully the models are good enough, just like heuristics today, like, you know, like to resist changes that people make to their code, right? So basically there's two types of interfaces that we ended up having. One is between compiler and policy, and there's like domain specific. What I mean is like there's a different question that you ask as an inlining pass from the one that you ask as a register allocator, from the one that you ask as an instruction selector or something like that. But then the ML abstraction, like the way we interact with ML, is common because fundamentally ML to us looks like a function that we pass a bunch of tensors to and it comes back with an answer, and we, you know, like how it's implemented is, you know, it's not it's important, but it's irrelevant from the perspective of the interface. And the implementations that we have are like either ahead of time, like I mentioned, or you know, the interpreter, so we use DFLite, like the people in embedded, or for the DMEMV case, we're actually doing IPC over pipes. So the state in LLVM today, like if you go to GitHub and you pull LLVM down, you basically have everything that you need to you know, add ML to a pass if you're a compiler engineer. It's TensorFlow-centric, no surprise there, but it doesn't have to be. So the abstraction that I mentioned earlier can be, you know, like, I mean, you can plug PyTorch or anything like that. I mean, we made a pipe-based protocol work over that abstraction, so it's clearly not TensorFlow-specific. Any tools that are generic, you know, like other utilities, like how you collect a corpus for training, right? So that's a problem. That's also in LLVM. We used to have them in a different repository, also open source, but they make more sense to go into LLVM. The training tools that we use, so for example, the Fuchsia operating system that I had on an earlier slide trains using those tools. They are available there too as a reference, but if you are a researcher, you probably want to use something like CompilerGym that is more researcher friendly. So there's kind of like different concerns in these tools. And then there's also like using the tooling that I mentioned, like there's another body of work that produced a large corpus of IR that you can use for like whatever you want, like training for these purposes or maybe doing LLM training or anything like that. There's links there. In fact, like all the links in the slide deck are in the, you know, like when you go to FOSDEM and you see the talk, they're there. come on, hold on. Okay, what we learned, that's what I wanted to get to, and I'm doing well with time. Okay, so the it works thing, right? So there's a difference between, I mean, there's been work doing ML with compilers in academia, but I mean that there's a big difference between that and actually shipping a product and shipping a compiler for production teams. So the key thing is that at least with a size problem, we have evidence from the Fuchsia team that it can work completely, meaning like they periodically, like about every month, pull LLVM, retrain a model on their code base,